91.9 WNRN Charlottesville.
89.9 WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg.
Listener supported independent music radio WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, boys and girls, cat and dog owners. That's what we're doing today. Chatting about cats and dogs and cats with our good friend, Dr. Mike Feetz. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming in here.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Feetz from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Cats and dogs, anything else?
It's Shark Week. It is Shark Week, you're right.
Snakes?
No snakes.
Gerbils?
Nope.
Guinea pigs?
No.
No, cats and dogs.
Cats and dogs.
Cats and dogs. Cats and dogs, it'll be. Phone lines will be open in just a minute or two. 434-979-0919. You can call up with your questions about your pet or someone else's pet or cats and dogs in general for Dr. Mike Feetz. Mike, your credentials for today?
My credentials?
Yeah, you actually graduated from veterinary school, correct?
Yeah, a while ago, 11 years ago. Yeah.
And Georgetown Veterinary Hospital?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been there?
Mm-hmm. 11 years.
11 years.
Yep. Spent my entire career there.
You did? Where'd you go to school?
Yeah, Cornell.
Cornell. Mm-hmm. So what brought you from Cornell in the state of New York down to Virginia?
It was a happy accident, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I have an aunt who lives nearby, and I kind of moved in that direction and didn't expect that a decade on I'd still be here. But the city's been good to me, so I think I'll stick around.
And Dr. Feetz also writes a monthly article in the Seaville Weekly. Mm-hmm. You can find that. It's c-ville-weekly.com.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can go there and find some of the old articles. I find them to be not only informative, but a little funny as well. Dr. Feetz, I think you have a great sense of humor that you include in your writing.
Good of you to say.
So again, you can call up 434-979-0919. Your questions for Dr. Feetz today, cats and dogs and cats, let's limit it to those. So Mike, let me jump right in with a question that I walked into the room with. So I always put up alert friends and family or others. That's right, others. I have more than friends and family. that who the guest is going to be, if I think it's specifically interesting to them. And so I walk in with a question from Claire. What is your opinion on a pet owner's responsibility at a dog park?
It's broad.
It is,
you know,
yes.
I think
this comes from a specific incident,
uh-huh.
I'm sure, that I'll share with you when you're done. So what is the owner's responsibility?
I mean, to generalize, I think you just need to know your own dog, how they interact with other dogs, and if you think there's any likelihood that dog is not going to, you know, get along well with the others in the park, I mean, it's really your responsibility not to go there. I mean, dog parks are semi-uncontrolled by their nature, and I think you just need to know your own dog and how they're going to react with others.
What is considered to be proper playful behavior and something that might get the owner to be, and I realize that when I ask you this question, mm-hmm. this isn't necessarily a veterinary question.
Oh, sure, but it's...
But someone who's been a dog owner for quite some time, who I'm assuming has seen some injuries that might have taken place at the dog park.
Sure.
So at what point does dog play become more than play?
I'm not sure there's a singular dividing line. I think it's very, dogs can play rough with each other and have it be entirely friendly. And likewise, some injuries can be completely accidental. So I do see dog play injuries all the time, and I consider those different than, you know, a dog attack injury. You can see at dog parks, depending how many dogs are there, it's not odd to see, you know, groups of dogs almost develop into kind of a little temporary pack And if, you know, they're tending to gang other dogs, it could just get a little bit rough, and you just worry that their lines of communication kind of spiral out of control and lead to something bad happening. But you know, it's the overtly aggressive behavior, I think, is the big problem at the dog park, and I assume that's kind of where this is leading.
I think Claire's issue was mm-hmm. that there was a little bit of larger dogs mm-hmm. wanting to play, mm-hmm. and I don't think that it changes from play. I think that even she would say that the goal was to play.
Right.
The dogs wanted to play with her dog, which was much smaller
right.
than the other dogs there. And she was trying to get the dog owners mm-hmm. to step up and help prevent that.
Well, that's...
And the other dog owners, uh-huh. at least in Claire's mind,
yeah.
seemed to think that because her dog was smaller,
uh-huh.
she was the one at fault for bringing her dog
right.
and allowing it off leash with these other large dogs around.
Yeah, I'm not sure she's at fault, but... It's definitely the case, you know, if there are a bunch of big rambunctious dogs playing around and, you know, you're going to the dog park with a chihuahua or something tiny, I mean, there is an increased risk of them getting trampled, even under completely well-intentioned circumstances. So I guess there's a little bit of just keeping your wits about you. I would say if you have a small dog that's prone to get injured, I mean, because otherwise, if there's no dogs at the dog park, it stops being a dog park. So... you know, there's going to be dogs running around there. And I guess it really just depends on how they interact with one another. So I kind of see both sides here. I'm not sure how the owners of the large dogs would be expected to respond other than to put the dogs on leash or leave, which again, kind of, counters the point of being at the dog park to begin with.
All right.
Yeah.
Claire, I don't know if you were listening, but it sounds like there's a little bit of responsibility on both sides.
I think so. And, you know, I'm not sure there's any hard and fast rules here. You know, I've certainly been by the dog park with my own dog and just kind of sized up the situation of who's there and decided it's not the right time for me to go, and I'll either leave and come back later or just, you know, pick a different day entirely.
Jennifer, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Mike, can you hear Jennifer?
Uh-huh.
All right, Jennifer, your question for Dr. Feetz.
Okay, I have these unusual cats, these hairless cats, the Sphinx. And I, you know, I have spent quite a few bucks on these animals to begin with. And then I've spent thousands trying to solve a problem that I understand is fairly inherent in this breed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's chronic rhinitis.
Uh-huh.
And I have, I understand a number of things can cause it, the herpes virus being one consideration.
Mm-hmm.
However, I understand that most cats test positive for the herpes virus. So, well, my biggest question is, mm-hmm. I spent thousands having them scoped, having biopsies done. Oh, everything I've done has,
yeah.
You know, I have no conclusions.
Yeah.
Nothing's been prescribed that's been effective
mm-hmm.
in solving this issue of, just runny noses, huge boogies that they sneeze out all the time. We call this one pair the Booger Brothers.
Oh, goodness.
It's a real problem. It's
yeah.
just that so
well, and it's a shame that they're all affected. It's let's say
they are.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it's, you know, like anything else, you breed an animal and
yeah.
you keep breeding them down to for certain characteristics, you're bound to breed in
of course
the negative things. Well,
yeah.
My question for you is there anything that you know of that I can give them, even if it's something experimental,
right.
there's a lot of experimental things out there, that I can apply either to into their nose directly, a pill, a shot, something that's an antihistamine.
Right.
I need to dry these guys up.
Yeah.
And I will get off the phone and let you answer this
yeah.
and take notes. Okay?
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I sympathize. That's a it's a lousy situation, and chronic upper respiratory problems in cats they are very frustrating. And she's right; they are frequently due to underlying viral diseases. Specifically, there's a herpes viral disease that most cats are vaccinated for, but unfortunately, a lot of them contract it well before their vaccine series started, and as a result, we can't protect all of them from it. The short answer, unfortunately, is no. And it sounds like the cats have been very heavily worked up. And as a result, I don't know offhand exactly what they've been treated with. I imagine at this point, if the cases have been worked up that extensively, that pretty much everything and the kitchen sink has been thrown at them. So even if I suggest something, it may well be something you've done already. You mentioned antihistamines. There are some that we use in cats, and they may help a bit. And if you haven't used one yet, I would you know, consider talking to your vet about which one they use and what dose they'd recommend. It may help a bit, but she's right. The care for these cats frequently revolves around not eliminating the problem, because frankly, it's not eliminatable, but in just reining in the symptoms and trying to keep them as comfortable as possible. I do, just because you mentioned squirting things up the nose, I've seen recommendations online to use over-the-counter products like Afrin and other nasal sprays in the nose. That can cause a lot more trouble than good, and I would definitely talk to your own vet about doing anything like that before choosing to. Because this is such a frustrating problem, there is, if you go online, there'll be no shortage of kind of homebrew solutions to it, and they should all be kind of addressed cautiously, because a lot of them can actually cause a lot of trouble, and I don't want the poor cat to end up with a nosebleed from squirting something up its nose that it shouldn't be taking.
Thank you, Jennifer, for giving us a call here. Dr. Mike Feetz, he is a veterinarian at Georgetown Veterinary Hospital here in Charlottesville, also a monthly columnist at Seaville Weekly. I can find them at c-villeweekly.com. Again, 434-979-0919 if you have a question for Dr. Feetz. And as many listeners know, we're going to fall back to questions or experiences that my dog Lazarus has had. Dr. Feetz, one of Lazarus's two standard veterinarians. We visit Georgetown so frequently that we have to have two veterinarians for fear of wearing one out. So let's talk a minute about elderly dogs.
Yeah.
Certainly many people who see the vet certainly have elderly dogs. I copied this from one of your articles. So, quote, these changes are hard to grapple with at first. They are sad and unwelcome, but our pets should be sources of comfort and happiness, not sorrow. It may take some time to refocus in the harsher light, but there is a lot of joy to be found for caring for older animals. It is, in many ways, a privilege to see them whole, to know them in all their stages of life, to meet them where they are right now, and to be with them when they need us most. To live with an aging animal can be bittersweet for sure, but it can be beautiful all the same. I found that in a very needful time.
Mm.
Because I think with many pet owners, the first time that you experience this
mm-hmm.
is quite difficult.
Yeah.
Because you're, whether it's your parents or your pet or whatever, where the image in your head is at a much younger and youthful vision than the one you're experiencing mm-hmm. on hand at the time.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that makes it challenging, and I always say this carefully because I don't want to sound like I'm confusing animals and children in any way, but the role we have with our pets is in many ways a parental one. And I think because of that, it feels unnatural to watch them get old and die. You know, it's not something that we routinely go through otherwise. And to take an animal that you care for and nurture and to watch that happen, I think it's very unnatural. It doesn't feel right.
I'm sorry, folks, call up with your questions. 434-979-0919. Dr. Mike Feetz here from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. But my experience is with my dog, and we'll continue to talk about that throughout the hour. But I've said many times over the past year, as Lazarus and I have been through some specific incidences of needing elderly care and old age, is that the animal is there to teach us the stages of life. And we see the dog or cat at young ages, and then we watch them all the way through until the end as an elderly pet. And it's difficult, It's not fun, but that's part of what they are for us as people and caretakers.
Yeah, and I think as awful as the experience it is, it's probably good for us as well. I think it's, you know, for a lot of people, and especially for children, I think frequently the aging and loss of pets is the first real experience a lot of people have with those issues. And I think that's especially true of kids. And you know, that's an experience I think it's important for people to go through.
And your pets, can you take a minute and tell us about, you know, your pets?
Yeah, I went through this with my own dog several years back. I didn't have pets as a young child, but in high school, our family ended up getting a dog. He was this little Lhasa Apso named Opus, and he was great. And he eventually came to live with me once I was in vet school, and continued living with me throughout my the first years of my career. And for a dog that you get in high school, who lives through to, you know, several years into your career, that covers a lot of ground. You know, he was there for a lot of very important things that happened to me, as a result, it was tough going through that, and it leaves a big hole, and it immediately brings you back to the beginning. You know, it's hard not to think back to the beginning in those cases, so it's something I've dealt with it as well. And you know, even if this is coming up because it's happened with your own dog, I think this is such a universal thing that people go through that there's always value in talking about it because yeah, we all do.
Again, 434-979-0919. Our guest today, Dr. Mike Feetz of Georgetown Veterinary Hospital.
WNRN thanks the following for their support of Independent Music Radio.
Brown Automotive Group, locally owned and community focused for over 30 years and featuring previously enjoyed fuel efficient models, luxury models, and budget models backed with a Carfax report and 7-day exchange policy. You can browse the selection online at brownautos.com.
The Modlin Center for the Arts at the University of Richmond presenting music, dance, and visual arts. The 2014-15 season features New Orleans legends, the Preservation Hall Jazz Band with Alan Toussaint, and the Gibson Brothers, with special guest Liz Longley. Details at modlin.richmond.edu.
Atlantic Organic Natural Sleep Shop. Featuring their natural and chemical-free organic sleep studio with environmentally conscious mattresses and bedding, including eco-friendly hardwood platform beds. That's Atlantic Organic, 421 West Main Street, Charlottesville. Website AtlanticOrganicSleepShop.com. It's bedtime naturally.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. Brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And here we are at WNRN with our guest today, veterinarian Dr. Mike Feetz of Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Thanks to those at 91.9 and Crozet and the Valley's 101.1 for being here with us today. Let's see. We got a couple calls from, or a couple questions from James in the Charlottesville area. Dr. Feetz, what could make dogs throw up green?
Throw up green. Well, a lot of things can make dogs throw up green. I mean, dogs throw up fairly often, and I don't know from the question if this is so frequently as to be a problem, or if it's just once in a while he pukes. Frequently, the color can come from what they're eating, and a lot of dogs do eat grass and other plants, and it's possible that's where the green is coming from. Green, though, can also be the pigments in bile can be colored green or yellow.
When you say bile, you mean eating other poop?
No. Bile produced in the GI tract by the gallbladder. So they may be vomiting that up instead. But it's usually going to be one of those two things. It's either going to be coming from the dog or coming from something the dog ate.
So at what point does... Does James say, all right, I need to, it's not just throw, or at what point does he say, okay, it's enough to take my dog in?
Yeah, I think it depends on so many other factors. And, you know, if a dog's vomiting daily, then I assume there is something really wrong. You know, it may not be anything awful, but it's probably worth looking into at that point. You know, if it's a dog that just every few months happens to throw up, that's more likely just, you know, in those instances they ate something stupid that upset their stomach. You know, dogs are certainly prone to doing that. My dog throws up at least now and then, and I don't worry about it. But if it were chaining together into a daily or every other day occurrence, then I'd start worrying that something's up.
All right. Second question from James, by the way. Call up with your question for Dr. Feetz, 434-979-0919. James from Charlottesville, is there a difference between giving dogs room temp water or cold refrigerated water?
Not a major one. I think because dogs can drink a lot at once, it's possible that water, if it's too cold, can upset their stomach and going back to the first question, make them throw up. I think in general, you know, room temperature water is probably less likely to do that. But otherwise, I don't know of any official veterinary stance on the temperature of the water they should be getting.
Well, there's and I'm sure many people who've done their own research have seen that internet fear about your dog gets really hot and you're outside in the sun playing, and then you feed your dog cold water, and that's going to cause some sort of fatal accident.
I think there's a few things coming together there. You know, one, it is very important, especially in the summer, to make sure dogs have access to water and can stay cool. And making that water a little bit colder helps that goal. I assume the tragic accident being referred to would be something like bloat. Bloat is the colloquial term for a really nasty condition in dogs. It comes on very suddenly. The stomach essentially flips over on itself. And in doing so, it both closes the esophagus on the way in and the intestine on the way out, but it also can pinch off its own blood supply. And that has been associated to some degree with dogs having a full stomach while exercising. It can give the stomach free room to swing, especially in deep-chested dogs where their rib cage holds the body wall out with enough room for the stomach to have room to swing. But that condition can also happen under the most benign circumstances as well. A dog just, you know, rolls over in their sleep and it can develop. I assume that's where it's going, but whether cold water specifically is a major risk factor there, I think is probably questionable.
Okay, here's a question from Barbara in Earliesville. I just moved to town and don't yet have a vet for my calico. Since getting settled, I've noticed black spots have appeared on his lips and nose. Is this stress from the move or something more serious?
It'd be hard to think of any stress-related thing that might cause that. And I don't know exactly what these black spots look like. Most likely, if they're on the lips and the nose, they're just pigmentary changes happening more age-related than stress-related, I suspect. It's possible I'd get a different impression if I saw them. I'd say if it seems to be changing rapidly, it's probably worth getting checked out. If it's just a change you noticed and it seems stable, you know, it's not constantly progressing, it's worth getting it checked at some point, but it's probably not an emergency. The other thing of note with pigmentary changes is if the pigmented area is still flush with the skin around it, usually it just winds up being a benign pigmentary change. If it starts to take on dimension, you know, if it's raised above the tissue around it, then you can might worry about you know, melanoma, tumors, things like that. But
so you mean if it's just did she say black?
Sounds like black spots on the nose and the lips.
Right. So if it's just a spot, a smooth spot, then that's one thing as opposed to a black bump.
Right.
That would be something more concerning.
Potentially more concerning. You know, these you think of them much like moles and people. You know, you can develop new ones through your life, and that doesn't mean that all of them are dangerous. You know, frequently end up monitoring them. If any of them grow too large or change, then you might assign more concern to them. But I try not to, you know, immediately go biopsying every pigment change on a dog or cat. It's just, it's overkill in most cases. Yeah.
434-979-0919. That's 434-979-0919 here on WNRN. Today's guest, Dr. Mike Feetz from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Call us up with your question about your dog or cat. You can also find Dr. Feetz in his monthly column and the Seaville Weekly. So, Mike, let's talk about something that Lazarus and I dealt with about a year ago that I found to be just, oh my gosh, it completely freaked me out. And then I find out that it's concerning, but, you know, hey, that's it's going to happen to a noticeable number of elderly dogs. Vestibular disease. The name itself sounds, you know, atrociously fatal. Vestibular disease. And so what happened was I'm in the living room. Lazarus is in the bedroom. He's on the bed. And suddenly I hear thump very loudly.
Right.
I go in. He's obviously fallen off of the bed. He's facing the wrong way. He's facing into the corner and the wall. And when I try and get him to stand up and turn around, he continues to fall over on one side.
Yeah, so vestibular disease, and I should be careful to point out, when we talk about vestibular symptoms in any patient...
By the way, let me spell it. Vestibular starts with a V, poor pronunciation. V-E-S-T, vest, I-B-U-L-A-R.
Yes. Yeah, so I should be careful to say vestibular just refers to the symptoms. Any dysfunction of the vestibular centers in the ear can produce the same symptoms. What we're talking about specifically is usually referred to as either idiopathic vestibular syndrome or geriatric vestibular syndrome, because it tends to strike older dogs, usually larger breed dogs, but I've seen it in all different breeds. It's poorly understood, and its defining characteristic is it usually goes away on its own, usually in days to weeks. But there are other things that can cause equivalent symptoms. You know, deep ear infections can do that. Seizure disorders can mimic things like that. There are other possibilities. You know, we usually in those dogs, especially because they tend to be older, you know, we definitely look down their ears, make sure we see no evidence of an ear problem going on. And usually if we don't, at that point, we assume we're dealing with idiopathic vestibular disease. And the recommendation usually is give it some time and they'll get better. The care is largely supportive. But the reason I mention all the other possibilities is just, should you see your dog acting that way, I don't think you should just watch it and assume it'll get better. Because if it does turn out to be something else, you're going to want intervention before rather than after.
And it's very frightening if you haven't dealt with that with your dog before. Because the initial thoughts are, oh my gosh, my dog has had a stroke of some sort, because it's half of the body that doesn't seem to work very well. You try and take your dog for a walk, and obviously that's not helping. That's stumbling because one set of legs don't want to work very well.
No, it's terrifying, and it's an unusual situation in that the extremity to which it's terrifying seems completely at odds with the relaxed way that it's managed, which is you know, take them home, make them comfortable, try and get them to eat, and they'll probably be better in some number of days. It's horrifying, and frequently owners who come in with patients like that are in a pretty extreme state of distress, which is completely understandable.
Yes, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
I was in quite a state of distress.
Yeah, no, it looks like the beginning of the end.
And this from a dog who has stressed me with many visits to visit the lovely folks at Georgetown Veterinary Hospital.
Yep.
But that's why I bring that up, is to share that with people, because how many, you said typically larger breed dogs, but I mean, are we talking about 1 out of 20, 3 out of 10?
No, probably not even that high. I see several per month, I mean, pretty reliably. So they're common all in all. Yeah.
Well, but again, best luck for those who are listening. And you see this, to me, it looked like, I always describe it to people as a vertigo meets stroke.
Yeah, well, that's a decent explanation, because what you'll see if you look into the eyes of dogs experiencing this, their eyes will have a very characteristic motion to them, which is the same as the motion your eyes would undergo if you were dizzy. You know, they'll track slowly to one direction and they'll dart back, and they'll just keep doing that rhythmically, and it's very much the equivalent of being dizzy.
Again, Dr. Mike Feetz here with us today from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. 434-979-0919. I can certainly ask Dr. Feetz about relive the variety of issues that we've had with Lazarus and cover an entire textbook of problems. but you're welcome to call in with your own, as Skylar did. Skylar from Charlottesville. Skylar adopted a cat 8 days ago. Cat has now been on a 10-hour meowing streak. Why? And what can she do to make the cat happy?
I have no idea. I suspect it's just agitation from being in a new home. I don't seem strange if it's been in that home for a week and was doing fine and now is on a 10-hour meowing streak. And it's tough to say. I don't know what the meowing is directed at or if it's just kind of crying in general. I would probably say if it's continuing that long, it's probably worth getting this cat checked out. It's too nonspecific to say with any certainty, but if it turns out that the cat's feeling sick in any way, I mean, it could just be trying to advertise its distress. It may turn out it's febrile or something like that. It's honestly hard to say. It may be a temporary behavioral glitch, or maybe the cat is afraid of something that wasn't there before. But there's no specific illness that immediately leaps to mind with that kind of behavior.
And me, with my many years as a veterinary doctor, mm-hmm. Makes me want to ask the question from Skylar says that mm-hmm. she adopted a cat 8 days ago. Mm-hmm. Did you adopt that cat from the local SPCA? Did you adopt that cat from a neighbor whose cat had kittens? And certainly if you adopted from the SPCA, that would, or is this true, Mike, might take away a few of the health-related issues because the SPCA is going to do some health checking as opposed to the neighbor down the street whose cat had kittens and is just trying to get people to take them off.
Yeah, I mean, depending on the kitten's history, and I'm assuming it's a kitten. Did it say kitten or cat?
It does say cat. Adopted a cat eight days ago.
You know, where it came from might change the potential pool of options. I mean, there's not much information in the question. My suspicion is it's going to turn out to be a behavioral thing, and hopefully a temporary behavioral thing. But I think it's worth looking into other possibilities.
Yeah, I see the phone line ringing again. So 434-979-0919. That's 434-979-0919. Mike, while we're talking about cats, one of your articles that you had written, mm-hmm. again, in the Seville Weekly, a monthly column from Dr. Feetz, cats and the litter box.
Yeah.
I think one of your articles was about what to do when the cat isn't using the litter box properly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is this something that just happens? Is this something that you can, that is a behavioral issue or is a medical issue?
It varies. I mean, more often than not, there is a sensible medical reason for it. Cats, for various reasons, are very prone to urinary problems. And they can range from urinary tract infections to things like bladder stones and crystals in the urine, all of which create discomfort and the urge to urinate. And then frequently that will eventually result in the cats urinating in places they shouldn't, avoiding the litter box. Cats are prone to litter box aversion, where if they have any bad experience in there, they associate it with the box and then they avoid it. They don't want to go back in there anymore. In cases where we've ruled out all of the potential underlying medical reasons for it, we can be left with just a behavioral issue. And those are very frustrating. And, you know, there's lots of things that are tried in an attempt to get it under control. And it's very trial and error, and it can be very frustrating for owners. You know, among the recommendations are things, adding more litter boxes to the house, those things can be frustrating for owners because they're making all these changes and the results can take a long time to come about. And in the meantime, it's frustrating when everything in the house is getting peed on.
Hey, Michael, are you with us?
Yes.
Hey, I got Michael from Flavanna for Dr. Feetz. Go ahead, Michael.
I've got a strange little animal. She's a black chow. She's 3 years old, and she likes to eat bananas.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah. Do you think maybe she's got a vitamin deficiency?
It's not like, I suspect she just likes bananas. I'm sorry?
I've heard a couple of people say maybe she just likes bananas. She just ate one. I'm looking at it.
There's nothing wrong with eating bananas. It's fine with me if she wants to eat them. Vitamin deficiencies are not that common in pets, largely because Unlike people who have varied diets all the time and may on any given day get more of one thing, less of another, dogs generally eat very consistent and very well-made diets that don't leave too much room for vitamin deficiencies. They can happen. It's not to say they can't happen. But in this case, I have a feeling it's just a dog that likes bananas. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yep.
All right, Michael. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right. The phone lines have gone crazy, so if you don't get it answered right away, just keep on trying. 434-979-0919. Apparently talking about cats having trouble peeing in the litter box. It's got a lot of people interested in calling for Dr. Mike Feetz. So let's do this. We'll be right back.
Support today for WNRN comes from...
Music at Maymont. Presenting music all summer at Maymont in Richmond. Tonight, it's an evening with Old Crow Medicine Show and special guest Langhorne Slim, beginning at 5:30. Tickets for Old Crow Medicine Show tonight and other upcoming shows like Why I Love It at Maymont are on sale at the gate and at musicatmaymont.com.
Whole Foods Market Charlottesville, supporting Service Dogs of Virginia and the Women's Initiative when you bring your reusable bag. Whole Foods picks up the tab for public classes every week. On Thursday the 21st, you're invited to Canning 101 at 7 p.m. You can find Whole Foods Charlottesville's class schedule at wholefoodsmarket.com.
Brick's Wood-Fired Pizza in Barracks Road Shopping Center, serving lunch and dinner with 24 beers on tap and a half pizza, half salad lunch special every day. On Wednesday, August 20th, Brick's is hosting a tap takeover with Southern Tier Brewery. Brick's delivers all over Charlottesville. You can place your order at orderup.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Whittemore from Literacy Volunteers of Charlottesville Albemarle. We are seeking compassionate and enthusiastic volunteers to tutor adults in reading, writing, or speaking English. Our students come from a variety of backgrounds, and they are hoping to acquire the skills they need to independently pursue life goals, support their families, and contribute to their communities. You can help our students achieve their goals by registering for our new tutor training on September 20th from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, literacyforall.org or 434-977-3838. I'm Amy, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org. With your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for listening today to WNRN. I don't know if this is going to work or not. Sarah, are you with us? We'll turn that off. Sorry, Sarah. We were questioning whether or not that phone line was going to come through the studio. So, are you with us? No. Sorry, Sarah. I apologize, but only line two seems to work, and it's going to roll over every time. So I'm going to shout out when line two is open. But first, we're going to take a call from Aggie. Hi, Aggie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. What's your question for Dr. Feetz?
Well, I have a 13-year-old lab pit bull mix, and he started to develop a fatty tumor. And, you know, we had it checked out once it started, but he seems to be getting many more tumors quickly.
Yeah.
And they grow fast. And I want to know what to expect when we take them to the vet, because I often feel like when we go, there's almost too much. And the dog has severe anxiety at the vet and will bare his teeth and growl. And they put the muzzle on him, and it's stressful.
Yeah.
All right, Maggie, I'm going to let you listen to Dr. Feetz on air, and I'm going to hang up the phone, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so Sarah from Lovingston, line two should be open, 434-979-0919. Dr. Feetz, back to Aggie.
Yeah, so as far as what to expect, I think, especially with an older patient, I do find owners start shifting a little bit more towards pragmatism. You know, 13 years is fairly old for the types of breeds we're talking about here. It's true, most of these masses will probably wind up being fatty. And lipomas, for those who haven't dealt with this in their own dogs, they're very common in dogs, and they're benign lumps, and they show up, and a lot of dogs sprout dozens of these things as they get older. You know, ideally, we do like to check them, and checking them isn't difficult. We stick them with a needle, we suck out a few cells, and we take a look under a microscope, and usually we can tell you within minutes whether it was fatty or not. That can be easier said than done in certain cases, likewise, the benefits of doing so can vary case to case. You know, if I have a 5-year-old patient, checking it makes sense, because if it turns out it's not fatty, if it turns out it's something we need to worry about, then, you know, a fairly simple surgical procedure, you remove it and they're cured of it. I do find as dogs get older, these things become less black and white, and especially a 13-year-old larger breed dog that has anxiety when going to the vet, I think you can make a case that aggressively sticking every single one of these lumps with a needle doesn't necessarily make sense. I guess what I would use as the kind of guiding factor here is, if it turned out one of them were something worrisome, would we then pursue surgery? And a lot of owners, understandably with these older dogs, already know in advance that no, they don't intend to pursue surgery. And in that case, finding the answer from the aspirate might honestly be academic. It may not guide treatment at all. So I think there's room for judgment call in these cases. And I don't think it's irresponsible when we have dogs in the later years that we choose to manage things a little bit differently. I think that's reasonable.
All right, Aggie, best of luck, because I'm dealing with a lot of that myself. And I want to continue talking about that with Dr. Feats. Again, Dr. Mike Feats with us today, veterinarian at the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Taking our calls and questions, 434-979-0919. That's 434-979-0919. Phone line is open, by the way. Ring us up. If Mallory gets you and says that line two, the to be on air, isn't available, because again, the phones are going to roll over to the next available line, you can always give Mallory your question that way. So ring us up, 434-979-0919. Mike, we have Eleanor from Charlottesville who says, who is your favorite celebrity pet?
I've never considered the question before. My favorite celebrity pet.
Way to go, Eleanor.
Yeah, you've officially stumped me. I have no idea how to answer that question.
How about, you have any favorite pets in movies, even though you may not know them because they're a celebrity, but you know?
No, I'm not sure I do.
Lassie? I mean, do we have to go back to Lassie?
That's such an obvious answer. I mean...
well, you have
that's just phoning in an answer at that point to say Lassie.
It's 11:42, yeah. So you have about 18 minutes left.
I may have to think about this, and next time I'm on, you can
let that rumble around in the back of your head and see what happens. 434-979-0919. Eleanor has stumped Dr. Feats
at a loss
so far for the hour with that. 434-979-0919. Dr. Mike Feats here with us today as we talk about dogs and cats, and answer your questions. So, Mike, we were talking with Aggie about older pets,
yeah.
And you mentioned sometimes, you know, decisions you just have to live with the situation, mm-hmm. for the best quality of life for the animal, him or herself.
Yeah, I think one thing which I consider a very positive thing in veterinary medicine is, I think we have the ability to focus on maintaining quality of life and not worry so much about constantly striving for length of life. We don't have to, with these older patients, solve every single problem they have. I think they do reach a point, you know, where it's okay to say that my goal now is to keep this pet happy and comfortable within reason and not do anything unusually aggressive or dramatic. And I think that's fair. And I think most veterinarians would even encourage that sort of decision making. I think from the professional end, we frequently don't like doing unusually aggressive things. But it's also understandable. This is a very, even when you say aggressive, that's a very fuzzy term. And you know, depending on the owner, the patient's temperament, everything else, what even counts as aggressive can be different from case to case. You know, I wouldn't want to use that as a reason to just ignore an old animal's health. But I think it does change what you focus on and how you consider options.
Again, Lazarus, my dog, who is 13 years old now, 13-year-old plot hound, who sees Dr. Feetz and Dr. Peppard at the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. And that's a decision that I have made. Lazarus has liver cancer. He's lasted much longer than anyone expected, 35 weeks. And but in attempts to help variety of issues that are come from the liver cancer, we were had him on antibiotics, and he wasn't eating well. He lost a dramatic amount of weight. And the decision that I made was the time is quite near. And so let's take him off the antibiotics so that he can eat well. And here we've gone another 4 or 5 weeks without that.
Right.
And that's, you know, I think that's what you're talking about, or I, it feels like that's what you're talking about is to let the animal have the best life possible.
Of course. Yeah, I think that should always be the goal. I mean, frankly, I think that should be the goal of medicine, period. It should be always improving life and not just making it longer. The you know, and in Lazarus's case, I think what you're talking about, as these dogs get older and as they start to have more than one problem, you are often in a position where you have to choose how to treat in each individual thing and understand that those things may rub into each other in ways that, that, you know, fixing one thing worsens another thing. And, you know, Lazarus, he was having fairly severe skin infections and, you know, the antibiotics would help, but then they harmed him in another way. And then it, you know, damaged his appetite. You know, it's one thing if you have a 3-year-old dog and you interfere with their appetite for a week, that's fine. They're back to normal afterwards. You have an, a geriatric patient who doesn't eat for a week, and that, that can really be damaging to an older patient. You know, that, that can really put them pretty far behind. And those things matter. And we always have to monitor, you know, what we're trying to accomplish with what we actually end up accomplishing in these cases.
I'm curious as to what your thoughts are on the quality of life. Because as we, you know, the caretakers of geriatric dogs, of elderly dogs, you're right there on top of it. So you see it. And in some ways, I feel like I see every little change. And on some ways, when someone else who hasn't seen him in a while, or we go back to Georgetown, and the question is, oh, gosh, he's lost a lot of weight, or something else that may not be as negative. But, and I'm curious as to what you list as quality of life checkpoints.
Yeah, and I, you may not like my answer. I think, you know, it's easy to rattle off things like, are they eating? Are they playing? Are they?
Well, but, I went online and I found this sort of, you know, grade them 1 to 10 on these 8 points. And if you score above a whatever and or below something.
Yeah, I think that that attempt to kind of turn this into a quantifiable decision, you've officially scored, you are unhappy. I'm not sure. I just don't think it's practical. And I think in the end, and I've had this conversation with a lot of owners, you know, most of these dogs decline gradually. And like you said, you know, you see him every day, and but we only see him when he comes in. And as a result, you know, the you know, 3 pounds lost over 3 weeks may not be visible at home. Whereas when we see him, we immediately compare to the last time we saw him. So it's easy to say, oh, goodness, he lost a lot of weight. Because those changes happen slowly, it creates a really difficult thing for owners, because there's not always going to be a clear dividing line where on Tuesday they were a happy dog and on Wednesday they weren't. And as a result, especially when we're dealing with these end-of-life decisions, because the truth is, I think most patients ultimately are euthanized in veterinary medicine, and owners generally have to choose when to make that decision. There's not going to be a clear moment where you wake up one day and you look at them and say that, oh, now it's clearly time. There will always be that sense of, you know, well, I could have done this yesterday, or we could wait for tomorrow. And because of that inherent fuzziness to this issue, I generally take owner's lead on this. You know, I don't see these animals at home. I see them when they come in and they're they're hopped up on their own adrenaline and excitement being in the hospital, and I get a very false impression of how happy they actually are, whereas you know, their owners see them every day at home and really do have a better sense of quality of life. That doesn't make the decision easier, but I usually, unless I think we're about to make a tremendous mistake in one direction or another, I usually take owner's lead on when it's the right time.
How do you, the word happy was used several times in that. At what point or how do you make these thoughts and go through this for dogs that are not necessarily unhappy, but, you know, Lazarus is a hound dog and many other dogs that have sort of an Eeyore-ish, you know, aspect on life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think there's an easy answer to that question. You know, I think there's often this attempt, I think, to deflect that question. And you do, you come up with checkpoints and you come up with, you know, kind of pithy little statements like, you know, when he's not doing the things he loved, then maybe he's not happy anymore. But, you know, the things they love change over time. I mean, you know, maybe they used to love going hiking, but it may be 5 years since an old dog was able to go for, you know, a nice long hike. So I don't think you can even base it on statements that are that cut and dried. It really is a very overall impression. You know, I do find owners do frequently focus on pain and eating as two big ones. And I absolutely think they're factors. I mean, a painful dog is not going to be happy. And likewise, a dog that's not eating is not going to be happy. But the fact that a dog is not experiencing pain and is eating is not the same as saying they have a good quality of life. You can have a dog with no pain that just feels very sick. And you can have a dog that's eating but is otherwise not doing anything. And I think focusing on those individual factors as the deciding yes and no variables it can be misleading.
Again, our guest today, Dr. Mike Feats from the Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Take advantage of your opportunity to call up and ask Dr. Feats a question. 434-979-0919-1151 here on the Wake Up Call. Here's a question from Paul in Columbia. Is there anything to be concerned about if dog is drinking excessive amounts of water?
Yes. There's a pretty short list of things that can cause that, ranging from kidney disease to diabetes. An adrenal condition called Cushing's disease can produce those symptoms. Especially if it's a change and it's not an animal that has always drank a lot of water, that's definitely worth looking into. There's too many possibilities though for what it could be to go into all of them in any detail. But it's if you're seeing that as a change, it's definitely worth starting to look into the underlying cause.
434-979-0919. By the way, Sarah, apologize that we couldn't make that happen before, but that line is now open. If you want to call back. For Dr. Mike Feats. Mike, here's a question from Clark. Our 3-year-old mixed breed has recently started smelling bad, and no variety of shampoo has worked. It's not something she's rolled in, but seems to be a body odor. Is this worthy of a vet trip?
At some point, I think it's worth getting checked out. It may, depending on what's happening, there may not be much to do for it, but I think it would be good to know that the smell isn't coming from somewhere else. I've had patients where the complaint was just a general odor, and it turned out to be more specific than we thought. You know, it turned out that there was, you know, either raging dental disease or an ear infection that hadn't been noticed. So it's worth getting those sorts of things checked out. You know, as far as the general skin smelling, I mean, if it really is just kind of emanating from the animal in general, most of those things ultimately are managed with things like shampoos. So the note that none of them are helping makes me wonder if this is not coming from the skin and it is coming from somewhere else that's just currently getting overlooked.
I'm sure that neither one of us want to promote specific medicines, but I will say, as owner of a hound dog who had a variety or an ongoing number of ear infections in life, at some point, Georgetown Veterinary Hospital turned me towards an ear product, I want to say T8KO or something like that.
Yeah, we have a few different flush products.
That has worked, and we have not had any ear infections for this otherwise always always unhealthy dog.
Yeah, and you definitely want to get it checked specifically. You know, different flushes do different things. Different rinses do different things. Some are intended for bacterial infections. Other are intended for yeast infections. So it depends on what's common in that dog, if that's even what's going on in this particular case.
All right, let me punch all the right buttons and take a call from Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hi.
Your question for Dr. Feetz.
Yeah, we have a 15-year-old Chihuahua mix, and he's doing real well. He's getting a little dementia.
Mm-hmm.
But he seems to benefit from some fiber in his diet.
Yeah.
And our veterinarian said, you know, green beans. And I was wondering, are there any, I read that there's onions and grapes, certain things
right.
You absolutely don't want them to have.
Yep.
But in general, are there other vegetables that would be a no-no? It seems to me that in moderation, a lot of the vegetables seem to be considered okay.
Yeah, and that's the case. Raisins and grapes are unique on this list as being incredibly toxic to dogs. It's poorly understood, and the doses needed are not well understood either. It may even be that some dogs are vulnerable while others aren't. But some animals will go into, full out kidney failure from raisins and grapes. A lot of the other ones, things like onions, for instance, as basic practice, I wouldn't feed onions to a dog, because they do have the potential to cause a specific type of anemia. The truth is, though, the amount needed in most cases would be far beyond anything you'd ever feed the dog. You'd be cutting up entire onions into the food, and I just can't imagine anyone doing that. Green beans are completely fine. People use carrots very frequently in dogs. Most things are fine. And I would always recommend, doing a quick, search or talking to your veterinarian about whether a particular vegetable is fine. But if this dog likes the green beans, you can have at it with the green beans. There's not going to be any harm from that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Thanks for the call. So the phone line is open for a last or final call or maybe two. 11:56 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest, Dr. Mike Feetz, veterinarian at Georgetown Veterinary Hospital, also monthly column in the area's Seville Weekly. Mike, probably because of me, we often come back to elderly pets, but mm-hmm. We've had a couple phone calls from folks with their own older dogs.
Yep.
I think our last caller had a 15-year-old Chihuahua.
Yep.
I've asked about quality of life several times, but what about senility?
Yeah.
I have talked about what I call with Lazarus lost in the closet.
Yep.
Where he'll stand, we're getting ready to go in the door, but he's facing the wall just next to the door and doesn't seem to notice that the door is open and similar things like that.
Sure.
Are there things that you can do for this, or is this just an exact version of what a human would have?
Well, yes and no. There are things you can do, and I think, honestly, most of them are just management things, and learning to communicate with them in their new state, and learning to provide comfort in their new state. Unfortunately, for a lot of these dogs, not only are they dealing with dementia, but it's frequently coupled with other sensory loss. A lot of these dogs, their vision isn't very good, their hearing isn't very good, and that can make them feel very alone and distant from the family that they've been in all this time. So a lot of it is spending time with them, trying to engage them, trying to give them things and experiences that are interesting and can slow some of that decay that happens. Some of these cases eventually go in a direction where we manage them medically, but that's usually seen as a last resort. And I don't usually look at doing that unless we really feel like we're at a crossroads with a case.
All right. So we'll finish up with this. Pets eating inedible items. I think not for cat owners.
Yeah.
Do cats do this too?
Yeah, cats do it. Yeah,
so,
not maybe with as much gusto as dogs do.
Being told to watch the poop and see what comes out.
And it can be, most instances, especially with dogs, things manage to come out one way or another. But the fact that happens most of the time doesn't mean it happens all of the time. I'll see patients where, it's sort of the family joke that the dog keeps eating the kid's socks. And it's fine that he usually vomits it up or usually poops it out. But the one time he doesn't is going to be a big surgery. And Why animals do these things, I don't know. But once you know what their tendencies are, you usually need to keep those things away from them. Cats, likewise, it's kind of the irony of, you know, the classic image of the cat with a ball of yarn. String is just the one thing that really cats shouldn't be left to play with on their own. I mean, it's one thing if you dangle it in front of them and play chase, but cats swallow string and it can block them up pretty terribly.
And as with many of these topics today, Lazarus has experienced that.
Yep.
He once ate a big chunk of sort of Mexican serape blanket, and the tassel got stuck and didn't come all the way through. And fortunately, yep, for Dr. Peppard and folks at Georgetown Veterinary Hospital, yep, other than what is probably without exaggeration, a good 10 to 12 inch scar across the belly.
Yep.
I was offered that to take home, by the way, and I decided it was a little Ziploc bag.
We always have that discussion at the end. I've had some people upset that we threw it out.
No, thanks. Never mind. All right, Dr. Feetz, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Next week, boys and girls, Lee Channing will be here. Intuitive analyst Lee Channing will join us. Thank you so much for tuning in. Les Temps-Perdue up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong
and Max Cecilia Struther.
Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.